Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Robert Candle. Robert is the host of the well-known podcast, Tough Love, and he's the number one best-selling author of Unhidden, a book for men and those confused by them. For my male listeners, this episode is for you. Robert talks about the societal change and how it's harder than ever to be a man, how men are behaving like boys and how women are behaving like men. And if this continues to be the case, it'll be impossible to have loving, connected relationships. We talk about the hidden dangers of the swipe left culture and how addictions to porn and gaming lead to unhappy and unfulfilling relationships. He shares the hidden behaviors that are destroying marriages and what could otherwise be deeply loving relationships. Robert shares advice for how to take the cultural shifts and turn them into an epic life of maximizing success, happiness, and most importantly, love. He talks about how to love and to be loved. Please enjoy my conversation with Robert Candle. Robert, it's so good to meet with you and be with you here today. I'm super excited for our conversation.
Excellent. Likewise, it's a pleasure to meet you.
So just for everybody listening in, would you just share a little bit about yourself? Just a little story. I like people to listen to the story. Like, what's your story and what brought you to the place that you are teaching and sharing what you talk about today?
It's been a wondrous life. The way I'd like to tell my story is I was normal till I was around 28. And what I mean by normal was that I lived the American dream, my father's dream, corporate job, house in San Francisco, married, room for grandchildren, not quite children, but grandchildren. And then my life took a very sharp turn to the left, away from the status quo. And I went on adventures. I had a personal transformation and then went off the beaten path and started an organization around relationship, intimacy, and sexuality in 2004. Built that to an eight-figure international business. Left in 2014, completely burnt out, came to Venice Beach, California to start this current iteration of my life. And I've been here building my own business for 5 years. I teach communication, relationships, intimacy. On one side, I'm also a fractional CFO for five companies at the moment, helping them with their finances. And I do coaching, team building there as well. And then I recently published my first book, which is called Unhidden, a book for men and those confused by them. So it's been a pretty amazing life.
Yeah, no kidding. So there looks like there's been a couple of shifts or pivots there. So what was the transfer or what happened the first time that caused the stage left?
Well, two things. The first is I went to Burning Man in 1998. Burning Man is a festival in the desert where you can really see different parts of yourself. And I certainly saw different parts of myself there. And the second one was I took a workshop in March of 1999, where I made a total fool of myself. And in that moment, saw the two options. One was to continue on, kind of being numb and dumb. The second option was to go and explore. And that's led to me on my personal transformation since that moment.
I'm a Burning Man virgin. I'll be going here in a couple of weeks, so I'm excited about it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's quite the experience.
That's what I hear. I'm looking for my own transformational experience. Well, very good. And then it sounds like the second go round, you just reached a place of burnout and not quite sure why you're doing what you're doing, and made another shift. Is that correct?
It was really the company was amazing. We were educating. I taught over 400 workshops, saw over 10,000 students. Also from the CFO, COO side, how to learn about team building and licensing and legal and books and how to, you know, a PhD education there, building a small business to a international one. And then really the last year of the business just wasn't in agreement with the direction of the business. Not that I had a better idea how to do it. I just was not in alignment. So I made my plans and then had a good exit and sold my shares and really just started this last iteration of my life, which has been amazing.
Well, let's jump in and talk about that. So I love where you're going here. And so your book is, I guess, for men. And there's so much going on right now, isn't there? That's very confusing. I mean, I think it's confusing for our age. It's confusing for my children's age, for young adults. And what is going on right now? There's some big shift that's going. I love that you had a quote that says men are behaving more like boys and women are behaving more like men. Mm. And how do men operate in this Me Too type environment? And like, who are we as men and who are we as women? And how do we communicate? How do we get along? Like, so just dive right into what you're sharing and what you're teaching, because I think it's confusing out there for a lot of people right now.
Yes. I mean, my book is for everyone. I wrote, it's a book for men and those confused by them, which is pretty much everyone, to your point. It's really written as a translational guide between the genders to give people different ideas so women can understand what's going on for men and men can learn how to relate better with women. The major change, I've done a lot of research on this and it's really intriguing. If you look at the history of the patriarchy has been around for about 6,000 years, anywhere from 1500 BCE to 2000. And its origins was in nature to support the tribe, to create a system where people were protected. And what's happened over 6,000 years has gone a bit askew. But starting as late as 170 years ago, 1848, Seneca Falls, the women's suffrage movement, to the passing of the 19th Amendment in 1920 for women have the right to vote, the 1940s in terms of women entering the workforce in spades and feeling their freedom as men were in war, you know, the whole women coming into the workforce, the 1950s and 60s kind of trying to shove women back into their old positions of caretakers and nurturers didn't quite work. The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan is the best book I've read on that topic. And then in the 1970s, after the mayhem of the 1960s, the schooling system started to skew more towards girls. I say girls deliberately, women under 18, in terms of education. They started to switch the educational system, especially around the areas of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And what happened was in the last 50 years since that time, we've seen a major shift in terms of dynamics. Girls and young women and women are dominating the schooling system, where 2/3 of college graduates back in the 1960s were men. Now it's flipped, where women are 2/3. You look at the gender pay gap, 64 cents of a woman's dollar to a man's dollar in 1980 is now 93 cents for white millennial women entering the workforce in 2012. You're seeing some major shifts. People are getting married later. We have more single adults now in the United States than we do compared to first time in history. And so there's just been this really crazy shift. And then throw in Me Too in the fall of 2017, and men and women don't quite know who to be and what rules to follow. The scripts that men had handed to them by their fathers and grandfathers aren't quite working. So it's a time of change, uncertainty, which could be the best time in history, and it tends to be the most challenging for men.
And so what's the advice there? Like, what are you sharing with men if we're moving from this more patriarchal, and women too are finding themselves at this place of, yeah, I find myself very much in a masculine role many times as a business owner and entrepreneur and the different things I do. But at the same time, I want a man. I don't want to hold the masculine all the time. And,
right. You
know, even shifting that back and forth, in many cases or in a day to day.
Well, for women, my advice is it's totally true that women are entering into the workforce more and more. If they get stuck, quote unquote, stuck inside their masculine, to find practices to re-engage with their feminine, to confront their desires around this. And that could be as simple as finding things that have them more in their feminine. My favorite recommendation is a bath right after work. Come home from work, get into the bathtub, then engage with the family. Like, really, you know, take the time for self-care, to enable yourself to reconnect in this very busy world to that part of your life. For the masculine side, for men, my more advice for what's happening is to slow down and confront what's happening, to see. and to engage with it. A lot of men are seeing the challenges of interacting with modern women, and instead of stepping up to the challenge of being like, okay, this could be the most fun ever, you know, powerful, economically sound, sexually engaged, emotionally engaged women, this could be the best time. Men are tending to shy away from the challenge of growing up and expanding to handle women. So my recommendation is to confront, turn it on as a practice, and look at it as the best game ever.
Yeah, because I mean, I noticed a lot of that just in my own world is a lot of, you know, powerful, single, let's say you use the word modern women who really are independent. They're making their own money. They're having their own businesses. They run 7-8-figure businesses. They're awesome. They're working on, you know, emotional intelligence and spiritual connectivity and really into personal and professional growth and wanting to be great humans. And I mean, they're amazing women, yet it's as though they can't find a good mate for, and it's like, why is that? Why are these amazing women having such a difficult time finding a great man to partner up with?
Well, there's some amazing books out there that I recommend. One is The End of Men by Hannah Rosin. She really talks about the changing dynamics between men and women. And the bottom line, there's two sides of the coin that I think are creating this situation of there's no good men. The first is, like I mentioned, men don't have the tools or permission in society to engage with the challenges they're facing. Men, it's not a promotion for men to say, I'm having feelings, or I'm scared, or I'm nervous, or I don't know. That is a detriment to men. We're trained as boys to show no pain, to, you know, no retreat, no surrender, all these pithy terms. So we're taught to internalize our fear rather than ask what we need, which is help. We have trouble asking for help. And so the combination of that, the cocktail of things getting more challenging, us not having the skills or permission to ask for help, has us feel more disconnected. And the second side is that women, I think, are raising the bar of what's acceptable or needed or their bottom lines in relationship. If you go back to the 1950s or 60s, it was a man who provided. He may not have been emotionally available. He might even hit me, but that was okay as long as he was providing for me and the family. Now here we are, mere 70 years later, and women are like, no, that's not acceptable. I'm not putting up with that. The bar is now raised, and men don't know how to hit that bar. So we have a lot of disconnection between the genders.
So what do you recommend?
Well, I have a process, a framework that I tend to recommend for any problem, but for this one specifically. So the first step is to confront, to see what's going on in your life. And this is at a micro level. So for a man, it could be, I can't maintain a relationship. I have a porn addiction. I'm overweight. I'm stressed out. I'm a workaholic. Just confront. What is going on for you in this life that's not having the life that you want? The second step is to investigate. We live in the most information-rich time. Go to the Google, search porn addiction, search a workaholic, search better relationships, better sex, and there's a plethora of information so you can gain and learn what's out there. The third is the most important. The third is commit. And what that is a step saying, I'm going to work on this problem. I'm dedicated to enhancing my life. I'm going to face the trials and tribulations no matter what. Like, I'm in, so commit to change. Then find a practice that enables you to change. This could be as quick as a week. It could be a year. It's wherever the practice is. Build a practice for success to work on that piece. For porn addiction, it could be going, you know, reading books about porn. It could be finding a 12-step group to help. It could be finding a therapist to find it, like something there. Find a practice that works. Do that practice for your set time. And afterwards, call the practice complete, debrief what worked, and then see if you want to recommit to another round. And in that, in the process of confronting and seeing and learning and committing and changing, that's how you change your life, in the practice of change.
And then how much do you, thank you for that. And how much do you see as far as like really seeking out, let's say, like spiritual growth? Like there's so many things that, like we talked about Burning Man or ayahuasca or different retreats and masterminds. I mean, there really does seem to be somewhat of a movement going on at this total different exploration of humanity, what's available to us, you know, what, who we can become. And you know, what do you, how do you fit that into there? Do you?
Yes, I am a huge fan of plant medicine. I actually work for a company as a CFO that puts on high-end journeys in Costa Rica, one right now, helping entrepreneurs and high working people find this spiritual side. But there really is a plethora of options out there. And that's what the investigation step is. Just go and find something that seems to fit. You know, go to Amazon and find a book. How many podcasts are there? Like, find the niche of what you're interested in and just see if it inspires you. You know, we're moved by inspiration or desperation. You know, it's desperation when our third woman leaves us because of our porn addiction. It's inspiration when we're like, wow, I read this book or saw this movie or heard, you know, watched this documentary and I want to get better at my life. So look for things that inspire you and then see where your life takes you. That's a recommendation. So there's so many options today for enhancing your life.
Yeah. And in the relationship category, how many people really learn about relationships or read the books or go to the workshops or do the work? It's as though we're just supposed to know and have this thing all figured out on our own or trial or error or something. And it just doesn't quite work that way. So what advice do you give when it comes to relationships as far as, let's say, it's like, I want to get good at this thing. Like, where do I go? Or what advice would you have for both men and women to be better at being good in a relationship, you know, being a good partner?
It depends on the flavor of the disconnect. You know, there's many different teachers I'd recommend, from sexuality to communication to intimacy to men's work to women's work. The main thing, you know, 90% of self-help books are read by women. So, you know, really, it's really interesting in terms of the demographics and terms of how to find help. I think I would start at the base. If you're in relationship and let's say you're a woman with a man you can feel is not optimized or suffering or lost, and you love him, and you can also feel the relationship minimizing, or you can feel like it diminishing. No, the habits that happens in our culture is then the women's going to start to get angry, nag, nudge, manipulate the man into his higher self. Most men will respond to that by withdrawing, going deeper into the separation, the chasm, just being told what to do, regardless of the brilliance of the advice. The man, this pride, his ego, his inability to ask for help will have him pull away. And all of a sudden, the result is disconnection. If a woman can see a man is suffering, the thing I would recommend is to have a heart-to-heart and say, from a collaborative point of view, from an intimate place, hey, I love you. I want this relationship to work. There are things that are happening that aren't working for me. And I want to put the time and energy into us enhancing our life. I want to be on your team. I want to co-create this with you. And the benefit to me, this is an Alison Armstrong trick, but the benefit to me, if you got engaged, would be I'd feel more intimate with you. I'd be more turned on by you. I would feel safer with you. Are you interested in going on this journey with me? If the man says no, well, you have your no. If he says maybe he needs more information, but hopefully the man will say yes. And then together, you can build a practice of intimacy and connection. That is by far the most efficient and highest chance of success rate if you're in a collaborative, rather than waiting too long and then nagging and getting mad.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love Alison Armstrong, by the way. Her work's just been life-changing for me, for sure.
She's the bomb, the best in the business.
Yeah. Well, that's really, again, really great advice. And then, what do you see from your line of work when it comes to relationships? How much of them are disconnected, lacking intimacy, lacking the ability to communicate and to move on to, let's say, a better space? Is that the majority of the cases, or is that,
I think in terms of a bell curve, right? At one end of the spectrum, you have a woke, enlightened, interested men and women working on themselves. At one end of the bell curve. Then at the other end, you have people who will never, ever even consider it. It's like not even in their language. And then you have the center of the bell curve, which is where I came from, which is just the not even knowing what was possible. You know, that moment when I was 28, I had no idea the depth of ignorance I was in. I had no idea how much chauvinism I was swimming in, how much misogynistic viewpoints had been instilled in me, programmed by me, by my culture, by society, by my parents, by my friends. It wasn't that I was a bad guy. I was just an ignorant guy. I had absolutely no idea on the potential of actually being intimate with a woman. And I didn't even know there was a problem. That was even the worst part. And my first wife, Carol, was my white rabbit down this rabbit hole. She was the one who just said, I want more. And I was like, okay. And then from, you know, saying yes, then the great adventure began. So to answer your question, I think people don't even know that there's a problem. I think people are trained to be mediocre communicators. We're taught to withhold. We're taught to lie. The white lie is part of every relationship. The holding back of certain parts of ourselves is the social norm. In my version of optimized relationship, there's no holding back. There's nothing that can't be said. Everything is unhidden. Now, I'm not saying vomit this on day one of all the things going on, but building a practice where the truth can be told and rewarded, where you learn to hear without and taking it personally, where there's interaction of collaboration and intimacy, build a practice towards there. And in that, that's where the best relationships occur.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I wrote that down as something I wanted to ask you about is the importance of truth. Like, you know, it's the truth, transparency, and trust pieces. And I mean, how much is truth factored into most relationships, and how important is it to have an optimized relationship, like a really loving, connected, intimate, you know, relationship and partnership?
Well, if you're happy in your relationship and the status of it, I say don't change. If you're happy and fulfilled, okay. But most people aren't. Most people have an itch. And so if you want your relationship to change, the first thing is you have to tell a lot more truth than you are today. And you have to make it safe for your partner to tell you the truth. Without your willingness to tell the truth, without the other person's interest in making it safe, you stay stuck in that status quo. I'll tell you my favorite story about this. So I was running a community and teaching on relationship intimacy and sexuality. I've been doing it for about 4 years at that point. I was a lead teacher in organization. And I asked my girlfriend at the time, hey, how can I make our relationship better? Thinking like more flowers, take me out more, you could, you know, buy me this thing. Like I was expecting that piece. And instead she said, hey, I don't like the way you kiss. And I was like, oh, my whole male ego was just like destroyed and deflated. It was like, it's like, I can't think of anything worse that you can say to a guy than I don't like the way you kiss. And option number one was to like push back and like, oh yeah, you kiss pale, you know, whatever, be a boy. But what I picked was, okay, what don't you like about it? And she said, okay, this is what I like. And she turned my head and, you know, she got into details about it. And that moment, I was so grateful because she could have stayed in the whole relationship, not enjoying kissing me out of fear of offending my ego. Instead, she took the risk to say, I don't like the way you kiss. And then all of a sudden, our whole relationship changed. And that changed all my other relationships after that, because I was interested in being adjusted by my intimate partners. How would I know? Every woman kisses differently and enjoys something a little different. Her willingness to say that changed my life. So that's what I teach. Be brave enough to tell the truth, and also be receptive enough to hear the feedback. She's telling it to you because she wants to be closer to you. Don't let your ego get in the way. And that's how you have optimized relationships.
Love that. Now, you also said something on your website about, you know, the swipe left, swipe right culture. Mm-hmm. And even this, the online dating phenomenon and how that's all working. Do you have anything, like, what do you say to that?
Well, I want to say I'm a huge fan of technology. I am a user of it. It's made my life exceptionally better. I have, you know, all the communication apps. You know, I'm not dating anymore. I'm married, but, you know, I tried Tinder. And I want to say that on a whole, I love technology. And the important and, when used, you know, askew, when overused, when abused, that's where things go bad really quickly. What I'm seeing in Tinder and other apps, it's increased the quantity of options, but we've also not investing our quality into the relationship. back in the day, you know, back when I was younger, before all these apps, you know, you go on a date, she would say she's not interested in you. You go home, you feel dejected, you feel rejected, you feel all the feelings about that. Now what happens if you get out a coffee date, she says, I'm not interested. What do? You pull out your phone, you load Tinder and look for the next possibility. You know, you look for the next option. There's no time. There's no feeling time in between. You know, people are in relationship and hit their first bumps and like, well, I can always find someone better on Tinder. And we're not going into the depth. And it's activated in men, both men and women, but mostly in men, this hunter gamified situation of Tinder. And so Tinder used well is an incredible tool. Tinder askew can be really detrimental to many people.
Yeah, that's well said, actually. How does that fit with just the false reality of social media and what you see? Is that the same phenomena?
It is. It is. I mean, again, I love social media. I love tracking my friends. I like learning things I would never learn. You know, I love seeing my high school friends all together. I saw a picture this morning of my high school friends, you know, 30 years later, all together. That's amazing. And what we do is we judge our importance or our power or attractiveness based on what we see in social media. We're external validation junkies, right? We're looking externally to validate. So we post our pictures on Facebook and Instagram. And if we don't get the right amount of likes or the right amount of comments or the right amount of attention, then it means something. We have connotation around it. So again, social media is great, but if used undeliberately, it can cause a lot of pain. And the last thing I'll say is, like, I'm watching my stepdaughter. She's 10 going on 11, and she's starting to look at Instagram and looking at the visual beauty. And I can see her already being impacted, slightly impacted by the perception of who she is and how attractive she is based on what she sees on the screen. And that is a scary, scary endeavor. So we educate, we speak a lot about it just to give her the reality that what she sees is not perfection. The perfection resides inside of her.
Oh, that's lovely. Now, what about the, just when we talk about technology? So last night was at dinner and noticed the couple right across that they were at a nice expensive dinner and seemed to be having a good time, bottle of wine, but they're both on their phones the entire time. And you just see that everywhere these days it just seems like we're at this loss, a true loss of connection and intimacy and like our souls are dying or needing these connection and intimacy and touch or whatever the case is. Yet everybody's on their cell phones when they're sitting across the table from one another. So anything to say about that or your thoughts or observations?
Drives me crazy. Just drives me nuts. It's, you know, it's Simon Sinek, I don't know if you know that name. He's an amazing author and speaker, and he talks about how when he goes out to dinner with his friends, he leaves his phone at home or puts it in the car. Like, there's this hit. You know, there's biological evidence. There's studies that show there's a dopamine response when we look at our phone and people pinging us. And so what do? We take a picture of the food and then put it on Instagram and then judge what we're doing about how many pings we get based on the food rather than the reality between us. I think technology, again, run askew, can create a chasm of intimacy rather than creating intimacy. So the consciousness, deliberateness around it. Like, I use my phone all day at work, and then when I come home, it goes on the desk with my keys and my wallet, and I'm paying attention to my family. It is just a practice like any other. So taking ourselves away from the dopamine hits of our technology to interact with human beings is a practice that I think is really mandatory and over time will become more and more important.
Yeah, I guess it is the awareness that there is that dopamine hit. So what's more important, this short-term dopamine hit or this long-lasting intimacy, connectivity, and you know, it's more subtle, but it's obviously much more rewarding.
Indeed. Totally indeed.
Well, great. Well, just a couple more questions.
Sure.
One thing that you talk about is just how men and women communicate differently and anything that you want to share there that can be good for people to know when they're coming together. Just knowing there is a difference of how we communicate and by just understanding that can make all the difference in the world.
Totally. Communication is my favorite thing. It's the base of everything, how we communicate. And again, communication is not just the words. We communicate on many different levels. nonverbal communication, energetic communication. Like, do you ever like get a text and there's a feeling that goes along with it? You know, we do transmit a lot of nonverbal communication. In terms of the difference between men and women, I like to talk about it more in terms of masculine versus feminine. There's some women that are very masculine. There's some men that are very feminine. But so everyone has what I call the masculine-feminine ratio, a mix of masculine versus feminine. So the goal of the masculine is to produce, so is production. So for the pure masculine, it communicates to move the box from point A to point B. The pure feminine communicates to relate or for intimacy. The pure feminine wants to know how it feels moving the box from point A to point B. When you have a pure masculine communicator with the intention to move the box and the feminine says, how do you feel? It's maddening to the masculine. When you have the feminine ask and the masculine doesn't answer, then they're not getting their needs met. They're not getting the relating and intimacy they want. That's maddening. So it's a different goal and different motivations. It's like two ends of the spectrum. Now, everyone has a mix of masculine and feminine, right? So, but we see this a lot with men and women who don't understand their goals. Why won't he talk to me? I just want to know what's going inside with him. To her, it's like, I got to talk about feelings all the time. Why does she want to know everything I think? And you have different motivations. So if you have a masculine man who sees he's disconnected from his feminine woman, he just might think, oh, she's not getting her intimacy relating needs met. I can invest. I can put more attention on that, have her feel gratified. And then all of a sudden I go back to my producing, which makes me happy. And the flip for a woman, like, oh my God, like I can just see he gains his value. He feels manly when he does stuff. And I'm spending a lot of time wanting to be connected to him. I could just like know that about him. And all of a sudden it's not a demanding or a nag. So really just understanding the motivations is the key to higher relating.
I love that. All right. One more thing here. So on your website, you say that I have a loving marriage with a powerful woman. And so, and then earlier on, you said that, you know, your younger self was more patriarchal, these old stories, these old rules. And so how does your relationship with your wife now, this modern, powerful, awesome, beautiful woman, you're very much a masculine man's man just by looking and talking to you. So like compare the two, like how you would have related the old self and how your marriage looks now.
Oh, so different. You know, when I came in, my first marriage, I was 25, 26 when it happened. I was so young and so naive and also arrogant because I was, you know, firstborn, you know, New York Jews, firstborn male. That was just who we were. And so I was just uneducated. I wasn't a bad guy. I was just uneducated. And then the last 25 years of my life has really thrown myself into understanding, first and foremost, myself. Why do I do the things I do? Why do I think the things I think? Why, you know, I was born in 1970s New York, you know, the home of chauvinism, right? The East Coast, especially at that time, was just rebelling against the rise of women. And so I was born to be a chauvinist. I still am a chauvinist. I still have all those thoughts and viewpoints inside of me. The only difference is I have enough education now to understand them and not let them run me. I have a better relationship with the chauvinistic tendencies that I have today. In terms of relating with Morgan, my wife, who I just so impacted me, she just educates me from her side of the street. I educate her from my side of the street, and the marriage of the knowledge, but the marriage has grown both of us because we're both interested and intrigued by each other's experiences. And I think that is the most important thing that I've learned over the last 25 years is the concept of approaching things with humor and curiosity. Just wondering, my God, that is the most ridiculous thing she's doing. That is insane from my male perspective. Okay, why are you doing it? And she'll say X, Y, and Z. I'm like, oh my God, I never would have thought of that. She was the one who really taught me to slow down and validate her feelings before I go into my productive side. And so any man who wants to become better relating with women, you have the option. You have the option right now. It, you know, the simple thing is to slow down and get curious. Just, why is that woman doing that? I'm so intrigued. And then if you have the relationship, ask. Ask in a curious way, not in a chauvinistic way. Most women, if they want to, they'll educate you and you can see a whole different side of the world, and vice versa for a woman to a man.
I love that. All right, just a couple more questions and we'll wrap up. I know you have to be done here in a couple of minutes.
Yes.
So what are your viewpoints on marriage in today's day and age, especially maybe second marriages after the kids are grown, or, you know, there's not maybe a more fundamental reason of getting married, more traditional?
I love marriage. This is my second marriage. I think I wanted to get married more than my wife, Morgan, did, just because of the institution of it. To me, marriage is an opportunity to make it harder to escape, to run. There's a legal commitment to getting married. And so those who don't want to get married, if that works for you, that's fine with me. But to me, it adds another level of intensity and commitment to creating a legal contract between the two of us. And marriages and relationships all take work. I'm not saying marriages are harder than relationships. I'm just saying everything takes work. And if you don't invest in your relationship, by default, it will diminish in energy. It will just coast, and the energy will coast down. So if you want to be in a relationship, plan to do work. If you want to be in marriage, plan to do a bunch of work. But I can tell you the rewards of learning to interact with a powerful modern woman, the benefits are off the charts.
Wow. Well, thank you. All right. Well, one final question that I ask all my guests. I like to do a little myth busting.
Okay.
And so in your line of work, like, what do you come across most often that is just a big fat lie that you'd like to call out?
Women don't know the depth of how much men want to please you. They just don't know. My teacher liked to call men Tinder kegs of affection, looking for a place to go off. We love to love. We love to produce. We often don't know how. And so instead of asking, we tend to show up kind of stoic. We don't, you know, we don't have the same relationship to our emotions. We aren't trained in what's called EQ, emotional intelligence. But women don't know that. And then Alison Armstrong says that women often look at men as hairy women. We're not. We're very different. So just know that men want to please you. Men want to love you. And we just might not know the best way to do that. And you can be confusing to us. So make it a little bit easier. Give us some clues. You might be surprised by what you see.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate your time. And I could just talk to you for hours. So
thank you so much.
I'm going to pick up your book. I can't wait to read it. And keep doing the great work. You're making the world a better place by helping people be better in relationships and communicate better and understand themselves better. So, yeah, appreciate what you do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about My Money Coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call, and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.